हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 70. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Mother Jashoda then embraced Krishna, allowed him to sit on her lap, and began to look upon the face of the Lord with great love and affection. Because of her intense affection, milk flowed from her breast. But when she saw that the milk pan on the oven was boiling over, she immediately left her son to take care of the overflowing milk, although the child was not yet fully satisfied with drinking the milk of his mother's breast. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Mother Jashoda thought, "Oh, how intelligent the child is." Saying this, she stopped churning and put the boy on her lap and then gave him milk. Because he's just showing intelligence, he's coming up, he's stopping the churning, you know, so he's understanding the situation. Then she got up and quickly left. Why? Because milk on the stove was boiling over. One may ask, how could Mother Jashoda show so much concern for the milk boiling over that she would leave Krishna unsatisfied and hungry? Because I've heard people ask that. The answer is that she had such concern for what Krishna would eat and drink that she could temporarily ignore Krishna. Only those in the sway of prema can understand or talk about such remarkable actions in prema. It is difficult for others to understand. So, therefore, we just have to accept. There's the aspect of prema is so strong that it's about serving Krishna. So since it's all about serving Krishna, the longer term aspect of serving Krishna and the shorter term. So now it's point she can come back. But if this milk boils over, then this milk, which is special milk as we saw before, won't be available for making things for Krishna. Right? And so she was churning butter for Krishna. That's something you can wait. She does this, but then that has to wait for the other. So the whole thing is all about Krishna. It's just a matter of which one is working, you know, which one to deal with at the particular time. Srila Prabhupada adds, sometimes one must take care of more than one item of important business for the same purpose. Therefore, Mother Jashoda was not unjust when she left her son to take care of the overflowing milk. On the platform of love and affection, it is the duty of the devotee to do one thing first and other things later. The proper intuition by which to do this is given by Krishna. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam didami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te Bhagavad Gita 10.10. In Krishna consciousness, everything is dynamic. Krishna guides the devotee in what to do first and what to do next on the platform of absolute truth. So if we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna will give direction. Like that. But we always have to remember, it's that point of surrender. Not talking about how Krishna told me to do this and Krishna taught, no. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, being very angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna with false tears in his eyes broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Right? Because he has to be angry to break the pot, but they're false tears, but it's just part of the pastime. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Mother Jashoda, after taking down the hot milk from the oven, returned to the churning spot. And when she saw that the container of yogurt was broken and that Krishna was not present, she concluded that the breaking of the pot was the work of Krishna. And so this would have happened quite quickly, you know. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, taking the cooked milk, shushvitam payaha, From the stove, she entered the room where she was churning the yogurt and saw the strong, shiny pot broken. Dadyamritrakam. The suffix ka is added out of sympathy for its sorry state. Understanding that this was the work of her son, she put her forefinger to her nose and began laughing. She's thinking about it. You know, how you say it? Sympathy for the sorry state of the pot, right? Because now it's broken. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Krishna at that time was sitting on an upside down wooden mortar for grinding spices and was distributing milk preparations such as yogurt and butter to the monkeys as he liked. Because of having stolen, he was looking all around with great anxiety, suspecting that he might be chastised by his mother. Mother Jashoda, upon seeing him, very cautiously approached him from behind, because otherwise he might get scared. Who knows what will happen? Footnote 26. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 8 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa. Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. Mm-hmm. Right, so Krishna is doing all this to please himself. Mother Jashoda is doing all these to please Krishna. So just the moods that are going on and how it's here. So he's pointing out this is one of the unlimited dimensions of rasa. Right? So it has some slight difference than the ones that were described before. Because you see is that things that have happened before that were described like that aren't done again because they're already explained. Right? They're categorized like that. So now here's another aspect, another feature of the unlimited dimensions. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, from the footprints smeared with yogurt, the sound of his jingling bells, and the noises in the other room, Jashoda could guess that Krishna was in the room, eating butter. Surmising that, her face broke into a smile. A few seconds later, she decided to go into the room. But by that time, Krishna had left by the back door and gone into the yard. He sat with crossed legs on top of an overturned mortar for fear of crows and other animals, right? Because he's got the butter, they'll all come. So if he's up on the mortar, then they won't bother him. The verse describes from this point, having stolen the pot hanging from the ceiling, he had brought it there. He was afraid of being beaten by his mother for having stolen the butter, and therefore he was looking around in fear. Chorya, Vishang, Kite, Kshanam, Nirik, Shaya. Looking for a path of escape. Because he'll be looking where she'll probably come from, and he's looking how he can escape. Seeing him from inside the room, by craning her neck, she then softly approached from the back so that he could not see her, without making noise from her footsteps in order to catch him in her hands. Right, so you have all these different things. He's going from the place where he broke the butter pot into the room where the butter was kept and all that, then went out there into the courtyard onto this. But we see in the shloka, it doesn't give that much breakdown. He just left there and then he's sitting on the mortar. He'd gone to the next room like that. But it doesn't give, because the point is technically it's not at necessary. Because the principle is the same, whether it's in that room or out in the courtyard. The point is Krishna is happily sitting there eating butter and distributing to the monkeys, you know, as he pleases, and looking for an escape, right? Like that. So what better place to escape than outside, right? Because then you have all the directions. Well, if you're inside, less easy to escape. You understand? So the acharyas bring out that aspect of taste, not to make it more clear that this is the chronology and that, because that's not actually important. It's about the taste. So we see is like when he was telling the story, he had gotten up to a particular point, Trinavarta, just because of the flavor that was there, you know, killing the one demon, then the next demon, you know, Putana, then the card demon, then Trinavarta. Then he went back to the Namakarana, which would have been, you know, earlier. Like that. So that possibly was even before Putana. You know, either just before, like that. But and definitely before Trina Varga. So it's about the mood, how it's flowing at the moment, what's the question, what's the attitude, like that. Then he continues with the point. Right? So for us, these points that the acharyas give are to bring out more taste in what's going on. Not to establish, oh, but then how can he hear and how do he there? And, you know, no time and space questions like that. That's not what it's for. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, continued, when Lord Sri Krishna saw his mother, stick in hand, he very quickly got down from the top of the mortar and began to flee as if very much afraid. Although yogis try to capture him as Paramatma by meditation, desiring to enter into the effulgence of the Lord with great austerities and penances, they fail to reach him. But Mother Yashoda, thinking that same personality of Godhead, Krishna, to be her son, began following Krishna to catch him. Right? The yogis through meditation are going through all this thing that they can just enter his effulgence. Right? And it's all by meditation. Mother Yashoda is actually physically chasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not about the effulgence, but to actually just catch him. You understand? So how much of a greater yogi she is than the yogis?
Can we say that due lack of knowledge, that's why they choosing that path?
Yes. Means you can say that anybody in the material world, due to ignorance, is choosing a wrong path. So unless you're choosing bhakti, you know, coming in the parampara under the, you know, I say direction of the authorities, then it's the wrong path. Every one of them. Right? There's more recommended wrong paths and less recommended wrong paths. Because the recommended ones are the ones that are the natural ones to engage in the Lord's service, while the ones that are not recommended are the ones that are difficult to engage. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that one is very careful about these simply for that point. Everything in the material world is wrong. So the only thing that's right is the holy name, the Vaishnavas, the deities, the holy Dham. These aspects, these are the only right things. Is that like that? So it's just another form of ignorance. They've gotten tired of all the others, so now you're going to sit there, you know. I say, they got tired of eating pretzels, so now they just sit like one. You know? So it shows pretzels are good, but, you know, like that. So then they meditate, and they think that by merging into the Lord, it'll be happy. So again, it's just another aspect. They're using karma in the beginning and jnana at the end. So that's why you don't have to technically separately categorize. Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, all these great personalities that we read in the scriptures, like the yogis were meditating on the thing, and then the yayavaras that we spoke read in the Mahabharata, and other personalities, and Kashyap Muni, who is a Lord Shiva worshipper. Maharaj, haven't
they?
Lord Shiva worshipper. Okay. So haven't they just read somewhere from the scripture that Krishna Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they got and some few verses more, something like this?
Yeah,
like,
but even if they have, is there going to be an interest? Why would there be an interest? How do you get attraction to Krishna?
Guru Kripa.
Yes, so they may have read it, but do they have Guru Kripa? Right? Because let's take the Yayavaras, okay? They've read scripture, they're very austere, they don't keep a residence, they always travel, and these are the Grihasthas. And so then, where is the connection with the Parampara?
No.
So then why would that spark, even if they did read that, why would that spark that? So it's just something that is some esoteric aspect or different things like that. Raso vaisaha. Now what? Are you going to surrender? Yeah, so? You understand? Like that. You know, sarvam kalvidam brahma. So are you going to surrender? No. So that's the thing, is that it's mentioned throughout the Vedic literatures, but unless you come in contact with the pure devotees, you will not understand these. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you basically don't get a bigger scholar than him, but he couldn't see it, and he knew all the verses. But once he contacted Lord Chaitanya and heard from him, right, the Vedanta understanding rather than his own, which he spoke for 7 days, right, then all those verses that he had read, now he understood. So it's only by Krishna's mercy. There is nothing else. Does that make sense? So this idea that you can do something to make it happen. No. You simply try to please the Lord. So that endeavor is to please the Lord. You can say, but I'm doing something. But what's the purpose of what you're doing? You know what I'm saying? Let's say I take some fruit or vegetables, put them in the blender, and put some water, turn it on, you know, and your friend is watching. And then after you deal, then he's thinking, okay, well, will he do it now? Will he drink it like that, you know, to get the maximum fiber? Will he strain it, you know, to, you know, kind of get more of the essential things and not have to try to digest all that fiber? Oh no, or, you know, is he going to cook, make a soup, or what is he going to do? And then he watches as you undo the thing, look at it nicely, check it out like that, and then take it and throw it on the wall. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that, let me say, what is the point of that one? It was there for some reason.
Guru Kripa.
Yeah, but how does Guru Kripa fit in with this vegetable juice? It had some really nice connection, but, you know, it's so subtle it just disappears. Because you get too much of the explanation so that it's understood, the, you know, in, you know, the intensity of it, and then in the process you lose the...
So they have all this, I think that the analogy, there's all this qualification, but in the end they made a mess of it because they did not have that Kripa with them.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was the original point we're starting with, but how we were getting to it with this doesn't fit.
Not tasting it.
Yeah, you're not using it. Yeah, okay, that could be good. Is that they read all these things, but they don't know what it's for. So you blend the things in a blender, but if you don't know what it's for, you might do anything with it. You know, use it to wash your dog, or, you know, anything like that. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that unless one has come in contact with the Vaishnavas and therefore takes up the actual bona fide process of devotional service, there is no other path. As Prabhupada mentioned in the beginning of this chapter, it's not optional. You want to get out of the material world, you have to become Krishna conscious. There is no other option. Nothing else is of value. So therefore, if the only thing is getting out, then how do you value things?
Right?
Only in how much they help you get out. You know, we'll try another example, see if we don't, hopefully don't lose that in the process. Let us say one is stuck in some, you know, let's say it's, we'll use the typical war situation, okay? So it's stuck behind, you know, enemy lines and this and that, you're trying to escape, okay? So what's the important thing?
Escaping.
Now, how do you judge the environment around you and things in that environment, and endeavors in that environment, and results in the environment? What is it all judged by?
Safest, quickest path of escape.
Yes. So any of those that will help you get out, they're useful. Anything that's not, you won't. It's not that he's running by, he sees a pinball machine and thinks, wow, you know, a German pinball machine, let's check it out, you know, like that. You know, that does it because it's not useful for him getting out. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that therefore, since the whole purpose of the material world is simply to go back to Godhead, it does not have any other purpose. That's the only reason Krishna created. We may make other things out of it, but, you know, that's not what it's for. You know, it's just like I was reading this article that heard of William Shatner, you know, the Star Trek Walla. And so then sometime he was at some kind of program, and one of these, what do they call them, Trekkies?
Trekkies,
Trekkies, yeah. came up to him and was talking about this and that. You know, in this year, in this episode, at this time, you did this, said this and that. You know, what did you mean by that and all that? You know, he was trying to get out this, you know, some esoteric thing like that. And he just looked at the person and he says, "You should get a life." What are you doing worrying about these things? It's a show. It's for entertainment, you know? Whatever the company was, they made money, and we're actors. We do our stuff, you know? It's not meant to make a lifestyle. So that's the whole thing. The material world's only purpose is to get out. That's the only thing. We make the whole lifestyle out of it and everything. You know, we go into the bathroom and start setting up and decorating and, you know, okay, we'll do the study over in this part over here. And here's where we'll meet guests and everything. You know, that's not what it's for. It's a toilet. You know what I'm saying? So as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he did refer to the material world like a toilet. He says a gentleman goes in, does his business, and gets out. So only how much you need to do to be involved to get your work done, that's how much time you're in the material world. Does that make sense? But it worked. So that's the whole thing, is that whatever is useful, so you see your conditioning, how to engage the conditioning at the particular level of consciousness you're at right now. And so that involves maybe certain amounts of attachment or needs or that. But why are you involved in them? Not because those needs are of value, but because you think they're of value. Not that they are. You're convinced they're not, but you have them. Right? So therefore, then, they're engaged in Krishna's service according to the directions. That's why the Shastra gives all these things. Right? The varnashram, the all the different duties that are there. Then, performing that, one connecting it to Krishna, one gets purified. Right? Not that we're interested in varnashram. We're interested in the usefulness varnashram has to help us get out. Because it will engage all of our needs. Because the modern can't. Right? Does that make sense? You know, most of our needs in the modern society is engaged through sinful activity. But in the Vedic, it can be engaged in pious activity. Is that what I'm saying? So, that's the whole point, is that it being engaged, then it's there, and as long as it's useful in helping you be Krishna conscious, it's kept, and as soon as it's not, it's left. Right? Unless it's part of the duty of something bigger. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Go to the market. Okay, now if you go to the market, is a bag useful? Yes, so then you get your vegetables, put them in the bag, right? Because you're, you know, eco-conscious and you took your, you know, jute bag with you to take the vegetables instead of using all those destructive plastic bags, right? Okay, so you did that. Now when you get home and you're going to cook, is that jute bag any use anymore? No? But it's ecological. It's a good bag. You know, you're saving the environment with this bag. Why would you want to get rid of the bag?
Garbage.
You can biodegrade with the rest of it. Yes, that's it. Yeah.
You're so pushy. Yeah.
Really, okay.
Purpose is over.
Its purpose is over. And what is the purpose there is if you're keeping cooking? Then, okay, now you're going to take the things, put them in the sink, wash all the vegetables and all that. Then you'll give up the sink. Then it'll go to the counter. Then the counter will be there. Then use all these implements and that, you know, peelers and cutters and smashers and, you know, squishers and all whatever variety of different things that you have. And then having done all that, then the counter will be given up. Then you'll go to the stove, to the pot. Right? Then the pot will be, that will be given up again for then putting into whatever's the serving. Then from that it'll be given up, go onto the plate. That will be given up and it'll go into your mouth. And we'll stop here because the last example was deemed as, unfit for mixed audiences. So we will stop at this point. But the last part does bring us back to the ecological point. But as stated, we will not get involved with that. You understand? So that then is how it works. Therefore, one is playing as a kid, then one grows up, one gets educated, one gets married, then vanaprasth, like this. You just go through the stages. Only because they're useful to get out of the material world. But if we think that they're special and important, then that's what was said in the previous time, when Prabhupada is saying foolish persons. Right? It's just like, let's say you're walking down the street and there's a building, it's condemned. Right? And you don't see much, you know, windows or doors or anything like that, you know, as they are. And right next to it, there's a wrecking ball. And there's a guy in one of those, you know, how you say, hard hats and overalls, and, you know, just finished his lunch, and he's crawling into that thing. Okay? But we're looking at the house. Wow, nice building. And then we go inside, and then we start to, you know, think, oh, yeah, we can put this here and that there. And Prabhupada says that's the level of intelligence that we're actually functioning at. Because this body is going to die and everything connected with it. That we're making all these wonderful arrangements. So unless those arrangements are valuable in Krishna consciousness, they're a waste of time. Because everything here is temporary. So its temporariness is not the problem. The point is are you using that to become Krishna conscious? Is that what you're saying? So that's the whole point. So therefore, those devotees, they see everything connected to Krishna. And so Mother Jashoda is a perfect example. She's either with Krishna, or even when she's not, she's remembering the pastimes of Krishna. So everything is about Krishna and how it will benefit Krishna. She's cooking only because it benefits Krishna. She's making yogurt only because it benefits Krishna. Right? She engaged the maidservants only because it benefits Krishna. Like that. There's no other thing. There's no other purpose. Does that make sense? So that's what we're being asked to do. So we see she has a house, she has everything because it's all for Krishna. But if Nanda and Jashoda were Yayavaras, then they wouldn't have a house. But they're not Yayavaras. Because you only have them here. We haven't bumped into them in the spiritual world. You know, how you say, smart Brahmins, yes. You know, Pulindas, yes. But Yayavaras, not. Is that...
And now you see that Maharaj Parikshit is using everything that he had to become pure devotee.
Who?
Maharaj Parikshit.
Yes, yes.
The last days.
Yes. So he's asking what will bring. And you see is that in the conversation, the discussion, it's taking us up through. So what is required to actually become freed from material entanglement is given in the Bhagavatam. And then it brings us to 10th canto, which is actually the essential point. That's the Krishna's smiling face. Then we'll go on to, you know, his forehead and crown in the 11th and 12th canto. But the real sweetness, the real central feature is 10th canto. That's why when Prabhupada wrote his summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's Krishna book. It has all the philosophy and everything in the other 11 cantos all in written into his purports in that poetic style. Mm-hmm. So it's just like the Krishna book flows, he's worked it in. Like you see Vishwanath works things in like that. It just flows very nicely. So Prabhupada's done like that. Yes, so that's the whole point, is to learn how do these devotees use these. Not, oh, see, he's engaging Priyavrata Maharaj, he's married, he's engaging a kingdom, he can do all that, so I can also. No, one should be seeing how do you engage, you're trying to get out, how to engage these. So that he's a king, he's engaging these things. How did he? So the focus is on the Krishna conscious aspect, not on anything else. So that's what we're supposed to catch. In other words, the primary, and from the perspective of the primary, how they engage the secondary to support the primary. Well, we'll tend to look at the secondary as primary, and, you know, that's good. You know, and if you want to give some metaphysical reasoning why, you know, something from Ayurveda or Vastu or astrology, you know, like that, then even better, you know, because then we're getting to the quote-unquote primary aspect. But it's only the primary aspect of the secondary. Right. So that's the whole point. It's just what's behind the mechanics behind, or the metaphysics behind why the secondary aspect is working. Right. So in other words, the jnana and kriya shaktis, we're looking at that and analyzing. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at the activity and the kriya, but then we look at what's behind that. What's that? So that's the jnana. But which way is that going? You understand? Each is the other way. Right? So, if it's about Krishna, then we may do that to, if we can simply move from the kriya to icha. Right? And so therefore kriya is engaged in the icha, so it's devotional service. Then only how much jnana is required is necessary. But if we find there's an attachment at some particular place, that's where then you take advantage of the jnana. Because that shows the real position, the real knowledge, the real use, purpose, the real attitude. And then from that, then we can go back to the kriya and then apply it nicely. So in other words, the knowledge is what's applied in the kriya. But the point is the knowledge is actually in support of. Though by etiquette it's seen as the senior. But in actuality, it's actually servant. You know what I'm saying? Lord, like we see, Lord Chaitanya is there, he's the youngest, then Nityananda, who's actually his servant, is older, and his older brother, and so seen in that way, and then who's serving Lord Nityananda, so Dvaitacharya, he's seen as the senior most, he teaches, you know, everybody, he's the leader of the community. But actually, he just leads all that to please Krishna. So that's the thing. Does that make sense? So if by that knowledge we give up the desire for control and enjoyment, then we have something of value. But if we don't, we just get knowledge and think that itself will make it, then we're the guy who stops on the road, you know, we're in the Heise German train station like that, you know, military all around, the train is just pulled in, instead of kind of pulling the lapels of our coat up and kind of going inside, you know, we see the pinball machine like that. You know, how's that going to work out? And then the train pulls out and then we're running along and then they go, hey, and like this, you know, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments. Right? That's where we are? Mm-hmm. Yogis, mystics, want to catch Krishna as Paramatma. And with great austerities and penances, they try to approach him. Yet they cannot. Here we see, however, that Krishna is going to be caught by Yashoda and is running away in fear. This illustrates the difference between the bhakta and the yogi. Yogis cannot reach Krishna. But for pure devotees like Mother Yashoda, Krishna is already caught. It's just a matter of time in the pastime. She wants to catch him, he's already caught. Right? You know, but you know, it'll unfold as it does because it's about the Lord's pleasure. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's not some thriller here that, you know, as he runs away, then Mother Yashoda coolly says, you can run as you like, but you're already caught. You know. And then the music, you know, gets tense, and then, you know, the camera pulls in, and, you know, Krishna's fear. You know, no, we don't have to, it's not that. Yes. This should all be in black and white, of course, right? And so, but he's already caught because of her devotion. It's just a matter of the pastime revealing itself for Krishna's pleasure and for the amazement and attraction of the devotees to the Lord and Mother Yashoda, this whole pastime. So it's just a matter of that. Because the whole point is simply the interaction between Krishna and the devotees. There is not any other point. And so, because you're going to... It's so tasty, right? Prema is so tasty. It can be unlimitedly tasted. Therefore, the variety with which it can be tasted is unlimited. That's why the unlimited dimensions of rasa, they don't just mean unlimited means it's a lot. It means unlimited means it actually is. Right? So then there's always the variety of ways that this unlimited dimensions of rasa can be tasted. So, of course, it's going to be Krishna and the devotee. Like that. You know, Krishna attracting the devotee attracting Krishna. That's going to happen. But how it's going to happen, that makes the uniqueness. And because it's so wonderful, that's what's remembered and all that. But because it's Krishna and he's eternal, his pastimes are eternal, then these things aren't past. That's why it says there's no past. She can remember that he killed Trinavarta, but it's not in the past, it's in the present. It has a feeling of past because everything's eternal, so that aspect is always there. But there's the present of what is going on now. They're saying, so that's the whole point, is that it's a whole, that's why time and space don't actually mean anything here. It's a whole different concept. Okay. We're bound by time and space because we're controlled. We want to control, so we're controlled. Right? Mother Yashoda is devoted to Krishna, and because of that surrender, she controls. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. Everything works in opposites. Does that make sense? It's just like you want something to go quickly. What quality do you require? You want it to go quickly. Time should go by quick. What do you require?
Ethan?
No, just I mean one way. Yeah, you know, drive around the block a few times. Yeah, that works. You know, just like if you're stuck in Calcutta in the jam, you could sit in the car or walk, it'd be the same amount of time, but if you walk, it seems quicker, right? Yeah, no, you need patience. Right? So you want to go, you need the patience. And when you're not worried about it, it goes quickly. So that's the thing, everything works in opposites, because you're dealing with the masculine and feminine principle. So they're always opposites. That's the thing. We want it to be all on the same side, but it doesn't work like that. We want to be the controller and enjoyer. No, you can be the controller or enjoyer. Only Krishna is both the controller and enjoyer, but to engage in pastimes with the devotees, he takes one or the other. You know, it's always switching. You know, he'll be in control and he's laughing and he's doing things and the gopis are upset and things like that. But the next moment, they'll do something clever and turn it all around and now he's the one that's worried. Like that. You know, so when they have Madhu Mangal and tied him up by his sika, you know, lifting him off the ground and, you know, stuff like that, then Krishna starts to get worried. Right? Then he has to come in and do this whole thing like this and then the gopis. So it just keeps going back and forth. That's the whole point, you'll see, is that it's all just about taste. So now it will unfold in this way.
How we can understand in terms of when there is a pleasure, it looks like the time has gone means very quickly, but when it is pain is there, it really looks it is very long.
No, but the point is that. The point is happiness is removal of pain. So even it's like you're waiting for something that you really want to happen, that you're excited about, still, it's the pain of that you want now, but it's not there yet. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. See, first thing is when you use material analogies,
yes,
there's a problem. They're material.
Yes.
Right? They're only given as an indication. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They're not actually the thing.
Yeah.
So they'll always be limited. So the portion that they are trying to bring out, that much you take. Because if you try to get into the full logic of the whole thing, it may not actually work out so good. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Okay. This illustrates the difference. Okay, yogis cannot reach Krishna, but for pure devotees like Mother Yashoda, Krishna is already caught. Krishna was even afraid of Mother Yashoda's stick. This was mentioned by Queen Kunti in her prayers. Bhaya Bhavanaya Stitasya, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.31. Krishna is afraid of Mother Yashoda, and yogis are afraid of Krishna. Yogis try to reach Krishna by Jnana Yoga and other yogas, but fail. Yet Mother Jashoda was a woman. Krishna was afraid of her, as clearly described in this verse. So you see, it's all because of devotion, and it's all the opposite. You would think, no, the yogis, they're the ones on top of it. No, Mother Jashoda is. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, while following Krishna, Mother Jashoda, her thin waist, overburdened by her heavy breasts, naturally had to reduce her speed. Because of following Krishna very swiftly, her hair became loose, and the flowers in her hair were falling after her. Yet she did not fail to capture her son, Krishna. So despite all these obstacles, she still caught Krishna. So it's that devotion. Why is she catching him? Because if he's not corrected, then he'll have a bad mentality that'll grow up, and then he'll have trouble in life. So she wants to correct this mentality. So despite the obstacles, she continues on. Srila Prabhupada comments, yogis cannot capture Krishna by severe penances and austerities, but Mother Jashoda, despite all obstacles, was finally able to catch Krishna without difficulty. This is the difference between a yogi and a bhakta. Yogis cannot enter even the effulgence of Krishna. Right? Well, devotees, that's where they live, because otherwise how are you with Krishna unless you're... Because the effulgence is all around Krishna. And they only see the effulgence, they don't see Krishna. So they never actually get Krishna. They never even get to the effulgence, really. But Mother Jashoda is right there with Krishna, so she doesn't even care about the effulgence. So that's what we're saying. The devotees, they exist in eternity. They're not interested in eternity. Yes.
So what kind of a yogi was Kardamuni? Because it seems like he was a bhakti yogi, although he did not have an intimate association with the Lord, but still I think he was unlike the other.
The Lord kind of is a Kasyapa?
Kardama.
Kardama. Well, either one of them. The Lord's his son, so. You know, it works out. Point is in that age, in Satyayuga, then they follow the Astanga Yoga system. You know, so all these things, it's just, they're all done.
In that classroom,
Yasya Prabha Prabhavato Jagaranda Koti Shu. Okay, Koti Shu. Right, so you can see Prabhupada knows his Sanskrit because he knows where to break, where not to do, and all these different things. Brahma Samhita 540. In that effulgence, there are millions of universes. But yogis and jnanis cannot enter that effulgence even after many, many years of austerities. Whereas bhaktas can catch Krishna simply by love and affection. This is the example shown here by Mother Jashoda. Krishna therefore confirms that if one wants to capture him, one must undertake devotional service. Bhaktiyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tad anantaram. Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhaktas enter even the planet of Krishna very easily, but the less intelligent yogis and jnanis, by their meditation, remain running after Krishna. Even if they enter Krishna's effulgence, they fall down. Because they never get to Krishna. Right? Because the effulgence is just as bodily effulgence. And so it's not something that the jiva will be able to function in. Right? Because he has Sat, Chit, and Ananda. While the Brahman is just Sat. Right? That's what's manifest. So, therefore, unless he gets to that position where Chit and Ananda can also be applied, which is in the association of the Lord, in a relationship with the Lord. Because you're not going to see the Lord unless there's a relationship. So when that relationship is there, then one can be fixed in there. Then it works. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when caught by Mother Jashoda, Krishna became more and more afraid and admitted to being an offender. As she looked upon him, she saw he was crying. His tears mixed with the black ointment around his eyes. And as he rubbed his eyes with his hands, he smeared the ointment all over his face. Mother Jashoda, catching her beautiful son by the hand, mildly began to chastise him. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, not only did Jashoda catch Krishna, who cannot be obtained by the yogis. She also scolded him, who is constantly praised by even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Right? In other words, all the whole universe, including Brahma and Shiva, are afraid of Krishna. And they can't catch Krishna. And here, she's not only caught him, but she's chastising him. So Krishna is afraid of her. Right? With a stick, she instilled fear in him. Who instills fear in time and death personified, right? Everyone's afraid of death, and time, but he instills fear in them. With that intent, the verse is spoken, right? So it's brought out to show her position, how she's greater than the greatest yogis, the greatest demigods, the greatest controllers, the greatest mystics, everything. There's no one greater than her, because she is able to catch the Lord and chastise him. He's afraid of her. Srila Prabhupada adds, from these dealings between Mother Yashoda and Krishna, we can understand the exalted position of a pure devotee in loving service to the Lord. Yogis, jnanis, karmis, and vedantis cannot even approach Krishna. They must remain very, very far away from him and try to enter his bodily effulgence, although this also they are unable to do. Right, because entering means you enter, you stay. They might enter and fall away. So how did they actually enter? It's just like if you go into a big fancy place and you get kicked out, can you really say I was in the place? You can tell all the fans, I went into, that hotel. You? How did you get in there? Well, they did kick me out, but I didn't get in.
To the reception. To the reception.
Yeah, or even the door guys catch it, right? Great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva always worship the Lord by meditation and by service. Even the most powerful Yamaraj fears Krishna. Therefore, as we find in the history of Ajamiya, Yamaraj instructed his followers not even to approach the devotees, but to speak of capturing them. Right? So that's, they just stay away from devotees. That's the advantage of Tilak and Neckbeard, is then they can tell who you are. Yes.
This description, it sounds like without Sky Bob, you can't enter the spiritual world, just on the general principle.
Means that these Sky Bob means prema, right? And so then, but the bud of prema, that's bhava. Yeah. So only with the bud of bhava, then one can enter. Right? But for the sadhakas, then bhava extends down through the other processes up to bhava. So there's a touch of it. So because that is there, that's why you can do. That's what we were saying before. Is the holy name is transcendental and not of this world. So you can't chant the holy name with material senses, material mind. You can't understand it. So there's no way anybody can actually chant the transcendental holy name, only with the spiritual body. So what people who are not devotees, haven't heard from devotees, what they're chanting is not technically the holy name. Okay? So, therefore, then by the mercy of Krishna's internal potency, then one can function from that spiritual platform. And therefore, one can chant the holy name. Though one's realization of that platform may not be that great, but that's actually the platform we're functioning from. So it's actually a whole different perspective. We try to put, from here, and looking at everything here and the ascending process, but actually the whole thing's descending. So because of that connection, the spiritual form is covered. Therefore, if you identify as a servant of Krishna, that spiritual form, that spiritual intelligence and mind, they can be used. Though they may not be manifest, doesn't mean they can't be used. So that's what's going on. Then when that spiritual form is manifest, that's called Sarup Siddhi. And when now it's imbued with prema, and that's therefore not going to change, that's Vastu Siddhi. Because technically from Sarup Siddhi you could still fall. The example given is Bharat Maharaj.
Yes. I'm just trying to clarify. Is that correct to say that we can use our spiritual form without knowing, without actually realizing?
Yes. It's through, but it's not like you're using the principle of it is being used. The detail is not that you're sitting there and picking up the, because now that drink is prasad, now you're picking it up with your spiritual arm, and your material arms can still be using your iPad. You know what I'm saying? The principle is there is because of that aspect, from that spiritual platform only. Because when we say the Swarup, we'll take it as the form and we're, you know, whatever we're doing there. But technically what we're meaning here is the Swarup means, I am servant of Krishna. That's the actual form of the living entity. Then, depending upon the particular type of surrender to Krishna, then that will generate a particular form. But the basic principle is I am servant of Krishna. So as soon as we identify as servant of Krishna, or we come in contact with the pure devotees who they see like that, they're in touch with, then the internal potency then blesses that person by allowing them to chant the holy name. So the, you know, the guy's going down the street, he sees the devotees chanting, and he shouts out, you know, Hare Krishna. Maybe he's even just joking, you know, like that. But he gets that benefit because he's got it from devotees. You know, it's like, let's say, coming at Halloween. It's not an uncommon thing because of seeing the devotees, and they think it's quite weird and that, so it's a great Halloween costume. They'll dress up as devotees. You know, complete shaved head, robes, the whole thing, and go out and do kirtan. You know, of course they'll laugh about it, and you know the whole thing and like that. But the point is they're doing. But you know, so, but they're getting, they're doing kirtan because they got it from devotees, like that. So that point of that's the aspect of Swarup. You know, we always take it, Swarup means, oh, I got my spiritual form here and it's all happening. But the point is, no, the Swarup, like Lord Chaitanya said, Jivar Swarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. Then the form itself is a particularity of that service attitude. Right? So it's not impersonal, it's just that's the Swarup. So another Mother Jashoda is affection for Krishna, that's the Swarup. And it manifests as the form of Mother Jashoda. But it doesn't have the impersonal aspect. It's they're non-different. But for us, then we're slightly separated from the manifestation. But the principle of that, so therefore in that Swarup, only in that attitude I'm servant of Krishna can we actually chant. So to that degree that we have that mentality, to that degree we see that the chanting goes nicely. We've come in contact, so yes, we're dealing with the holy name. Otherwise, if we're not, why is there an offense? But if the name's not Krishna, then why would there be an offense in improper chanting? Does that make sense? So it is Krishna. So as we take on that mood of that Swarup of servant of Krishna, then to that degree we appreciate and understand the name, and Krishna reveals himself. Does this all work? Okay? Yeah.
It's always a descending process.
It's always a descending process. But you see in here, because there's a non-difference in all these things. Therefore, all those years of discussing, you know, the Brahman platform, the universal form and all that, the metaphysical form, then you can appreciate it has its slight point in this. But it's not the main point. You know, before it would be the main point. We talk on weeks on it. But here it's just a slight point. Does that make sense? So all that then comes out that now you can use this in just that moment. Like that. You know, so that's how it works. You know. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yet this Krishna became so dependent on Mother Jashoda that when she simply showed Krishna the stick in her hand, Krishna admitted to being an offender and began to cry like an ordinary child. Mother Jashoda, of course, did not want to chastise her beloved child very much, and therefore she immediately threw her stick away and simply rebuked Krishna, saying, "Now I shall bind you so that you cannot commit any further offensive activities." Because if he's tied up, he can't go and break any more pots or anything like that. You know, that's the idea. So the point is that punishment is only to get the proper attitude and understanding. So if through the process of chanting, then we understand how material life is actually improper and all that, and Krishna consciousness is, that then that correction has already been made. That's why in Krishna karma, one doesn't need to get the full effect of karma that one would get otherwise. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is also how to balance that. So when she sees, she throws away the stick so he won't remain too afraid. Because if he's too afraid, then how will she interact? How will she train him? Nor for the time being can you play with your playmates. So it's two things. You can't make trouble, but you also can't then go and play and all that. So it's like you've done something. You know, you have to understand there's consequences for action. Right? Yes?
It's interesting to know how duties increase the rasa.
Yes.
We think duties just, it's so external that we shouldn't follow it. But here we can see practical examples.
Yes.
It actually increases the rasa.
Yes. But they're being done without attachment to the results for themselves. And so as soon as we're told that we should do the activity without attachment to the results, then immediately then we'll say, well, why would I do it? So therefore it won't be very good, so it's a waste of time. But that's what we're trying to get, is that it's not just without attachment to the results, but it's attachment to the result for Krishna. But how can you have attached results for Krishna when you're attached to results for yourself? So you have to give up one for the other. So we've already given up that one for this one. But, you know, seeing that that hasn't worked out so good, now we're being recommended to give up this one for that one. Right? Okay. So you can see as we go, the similarities of what we're being given and what is going on in the spiritual realm is the same. Because we're here, that's very far away, but it's only far because of consciousness. If one is absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord, then one's in the same place. You understand? So there's a whole different thing going on, but you can't start with that. You have to start before and build it up. That's why you start at Gita, then come up like this, and then we come to the 10th canto. Is that
Is the hierarchy correct? I just want to confirm.
Is the hierarchy correct? It means which hierarchy? It depends upon which one you're talking about. The one Marx talked about, not so good. But, you know, yeah. Even Plato's I can't recommend.
The hierarchy, speaking of affection, as you showed up, therefore, hierarchy such as... Is it first attraction, then affection, and then absorption? Is it correct?
Attraction, affection, absorption. You're talking about ourselves.
No, what Mother Yashoda. And as sadhana, as by the sadhana bhakti, is the other?
No, but you have to remember, they're not sadhakas, so it's spontaneous for them. So they have that love for Krishna. That's the sthayi bhava. That's the basis. Then you have what's called vibhava, which means then according to the particular rasa. So if in here, Mother Jashoda, so therefore she's the ashray of that rasa, and Krishna is the vishay. Right? So it's all about pleasing him. But Mother Jashoda is the, the shelter of that particular affection. Now, in that, then you're going to have, you know, so that's the principle, right? Then you're going to have Udipan, right? Right? Udipan, the other one, what was the other one has a name? Or we just discussed about Disha and Ashra, that has a name. But the other part, then the Udipan means what aspects of Krishna are attractive for that rasa. Right? So there'll be some things are common for everybody, but certain things are common to a particular rasa. So if you're from any other rasa, it's not that those other things aren't attractive, but they're not the one that brings out your rasa. Right? Does that make sense? So, but it brings out rasa, so it's appreciated. Right? So now then these activities of his boyish activities and the parental interaction and all that, these are the things that are attractive for Mother Jashoda. So as those are there, those will create rasa starts to happen. So rasa happens when you have that stai bhav mixed with the vibhav. Right? Then you have rasa. Then that will be tasted as anubhava, satvika bhava, and santri bhavas. Does that make sense? So, you understand? So there's no order there for them.
And for us?
For us.
Yeah.
Then, unless you're attracted, then how will you engage? And only when you engage, then it will bring you to the perfectional platform. Therefore, sambandha abhideya prayojana. So, Madan Mohan, by his grace, you're attracted. By Govinda's grace, you get engaged. And then by Gopinath's engaged, then you get that attachment to Krishna. Okay. This shows the position of a pure devotee in contrast with others, like jnanis and yogis and the followers of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, in regarding the transcendental nature of the absolute truth. Right. So here, notice, because we may say, see here the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, but it says followers of. It doesn't mean those who engage it. Nanda Baba engaged it at the birth of his son, at the various ceremonies, all these different things. So he's not a follower of the Vedic ritualistic ceremony. He's a follower of Krishna. He engages them in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So therefore, knowledge, yoga process, this is all engaged by the devotees. We're not followers of it. As soon as we're followers of it, then it's a different identity. I'm a follower of Vedic ritualistic ceremony. So in what capacity are you a follower? Okay, I'm a priest of the, let's say, Rig Veda. Okay, so then you're a priest of the Rig Veda. So what does that mean? It means that when you're having the big yajnas, that you're going to be dealing with the fire, right? Offering the oblations, as calling the deity, offering the oblations, as dealing with that aspect like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so therefore that's how it's going to work. Then that's a follower of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. So that's their identity, that's what they're doing, and then the result from that will be the ritualistic benefits, the food of benefits. Devotees aren't followers of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. They engage them according to the directions of the acharyas. And so to do initiations and worship of the deity and other aspects, then these Vedic ritualistic ceremonies are used. Right? But they're to please Krishna. So then the identity is servant of Krishna, and therefore then as servant of Krishna I have a particular conditioned nature, so I can take these things and engage them in Krishna's service. So that makes sense? Yeah. So it's slightly different. The perspective is different. You can see is that where the view is from. In other words, it starts from Krishna as the primary, then looks at the secondary, while we look at the secondary, and then according to that, and then try to connect with the Krishna. So we'll begin there. But as we advance, then we have to, where we can, start shifting it until it's all shifted.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you mentioned previously, secondary was in the secondary, primary was in the secondary.
Yeah.
But now it's the primary was in the primary and secondary was in the primary. What
yes.
we see with the Govardhan Leela,
yes.
Krishna wouldn't want Nanda Baba to engage even in that. He wanted to worship Govardhan.
Yes.
So within primary, there's also
yes.
positions.
Yes. Yes. So the focus is always on the primary, then the secondary, the primary, is used to express it. And so in that way, you don't really make a difference as long as the primary is there. So there, they were worshiping as an indirect aspect. So if you please Indra, then you get all the nice rain, and if the nice rains, you can grow all the crops, the cows can eat, then you have all these nice things that you can use for pleasing Krishna. But, so in that way, it's not a problem. But at the same time is that since Indra is not actually the one to give, it's Krishna who gives, so then he could do that directly also. So that's the, you know, so it's just like, or in the Leela to protect the devotees. That's the primary aspect. What's the secondary? He lifted the hill, and they all were under the hill like an umbrella. You know, so there's a non-difference on that platform. That's the beauty. For us, we make the differences because by the default setting, we never will deal with the primary. Because we already consider we are the primary, so it's already done. You know, it's that fait accompli. You know, it's done. You know, it's you know. So, yeah. But yes, you see. So, Mother just showed us, you know, like churning the milk and butter and cooking. These are all the secondary aspects of her devotion, her love for Krishna and the parental rod. That's the primary. You know, and even if you take that, then the love for Krishna, that's the and then it has that specific aspect. You know what I'm saying? So for them, it's non-different because they're already perfect. But for us, we have to understand that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then we take it that the first stage of bhav sadhana is to meditate on our position in Vrindavan. No, it's to meditate on the love that the Brajabasis have for Krishna. Therefore, the example of any one of them is inspiring. You know, like now, we're talking about this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing it out. Prabhupada's pointing it out. Right? And, you know, Vishwanath, we know, no one's ever said that he's an elder gopi. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is they can appreciate the rasa, they can appreciate the detail. It's not their specific service, but they can appreciate. That's the whole point. So this idea is, no, I can only read, you know, this kind of pastime. That means then you've missed the point, because there the Brajbasis appreciate anyone's service. They even appreciate someone else's service. You know, it's just like Lakshmiji. She can officially sit with Krishna all day, you know, on the same throne, and nobody complains. They have to hide. So she's so fortunate. You know what I'm saying? So they appreciate the service.
Yes. Is it because that this particular quality of appreciation that is there within all the devotees in the Raja, that's why, I mean, like in Dalaka in general, that's why you say that the basis is friendship between all the devotees?
The basis is friendship because they appreciate everybody. Yeah, you could say. But I'm saying appreciation is the basis of any rasa, any relationship, there has to be appreciation. But the natural tendency is that, because means if you have another person who has the same purpose as you, then naturally there's friendship. You understand? So because everybody's trying to please Krishna, therefore everybody's a friend. So, this shows the position of a pure devotee in contrast with others like jnanis, yogis, and the followers of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies in regarding the transcendental nature of the Absolute Truth. So the Absolute Truth is above all these things because he's the source of them, he's the cause of them. So therefore there's no question of, you know, approaching him as a person without transcending all these other aspects. Transcending doesn't mean you don't engage them. Transcending means you stop being controlled by them. You're not a follower of jnana, yoga, or karma. Right? When you stop being the follower of them, then you transcend. Transcending doesn't mean you don't engage them. That's also an impersonal concept. Right? Oh, it's because now I don't use it. No, it's engaged in Krishna's service. Because Krishna is the transcendental aspect. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Mother Jashoda was always overwhelmed by intense love for Krishna, not knowing who Krishna was or how powerful he was. Because of maternal affection for Krishna, she never even cared to know who he was, right? Because if there's so much affection, you don't care. You know, you just don't care. So it's not important. You know what the past is, what this and that. If the affection's there, you don't worry about it. But you don't know, you don't have affection. Then you get to know. You ask questions and this and that. They have this affection, so they're not worried. They don't care if he's the Supreme Personality. They're not even going to check it out. Not even by interest sake. Therefore, when she saw that her son had become excessively afraid, she threw the stick away and desired to bind him so that he would not commit any further naughty activities. Footnote 27. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 12 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So, here just that worried about Krishna. She only cares about Krishna. She doesn't care about anything else. That's all. Just her affection is all that she's worried about. And so, therefore, she sees as Krishna becomes, afraid, then, therefore, she shows that kindness. And so she throws the stick away because he's afraid of the stick. Get rid of the stick, then that problem is gone. Then she can deal with him nicely. You know, and also, it's there to please Krishna. So Krishna is very pleased by all this, because who will deal with him as normal? Right? Mm-hmm. Everyone, oh, he's God. You can't just have a normal conversation. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're always trying to take a selfie, or, you know, while you're talking to him, you know, send something to somebody, hey, you know, like that kind of stuff. So, yes. Srila Prabhupada comments, Mother Jashoda wanted to impress upon Krishna that since he was afraid merely to see her stick, he should not perform such disturbing activities as breaking the container of yogurt and butter and distributing its contents to the monkeys, right? She makes all that yogurt for him, to please him, to feed him. But, of course, he likes to distribute to the monkeys, so it does please him, so the pastime goes on. But the point is that she'll see it from that point. Mother Jashoda did not care to understand who Krishna was and how his power spreads everywhere. This is an example of pure love for Krishna. So that's the thing, is that he's performed these activities bring out the stick. So if he's afraid of the stick, stop doing these activities. Right? So the Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Mother Jashoda could understand that Krishna was unnecessarily afraid, and for this, and for his benefit, she wanted to allay his fears. Being the topmost well-wisher of her child, Mother Jashoda thought, if the child is too fearful of me, I don't know what will happen to him, right? Because she's taking care, she's protecting, feeding. If he's too afraid, then how all this will go on nicely, right? So therefore, she wants to allay his fears. Like that. Because he was unnecessarily afraid. How much is for this position? Then that much should be there, but it was more, so she wanted to bring it down. Mother Jashoda then threw away her stick. In order to punish him, she thought to bind his hands with some ropes. Sukadeva Goswami continued, The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no beginning and no end, no exterior and no interior, no front and no rear. In other words, he is all-pervading, because he is not under the influence of the elements of time. For him, there is no difference between past, present, and future. Right, so he's not controlled by these things, so he is everything. Well, how can he be everything and be in a form? And that's the whole thing. That's him. That's why he's beyond. So how much knowledge allows us to understand to the point where we take up the relationship with Krishna, surrender to Krishna, that's the value. But more than that, then we won't understand. You can't. Because he's beyond. I think it's one place the point is made. He's beyond spiritual. You know, sometimes you always get bent out of shape with that one. But the point is, the internal potency we'll call spiritual. And then there's the jiva, and then there's the external energy. Mm-hmm. Right? So the external energy is a shadow of the internal potency. The jivas are expansions of that. So that means then of the Shaktis, that's the highest, is the internal potency. But Krishna being the source is beyond it. So he's in another category. But to interact, therefore he, with his internal potency, therefore then performs his pastimes. So that's the thing. He can be all these contradictory things at once. And you notice when they start seriously describing, they'll always show the contradiction. Right? And in this case, they can be as extreme as they like, because he is. Right? He exists in his own transcendental form at all times. So it's not this idea, okay, well, he is pervading everywhere, so there's that impersonal aspect. Then he manifests the form. No, he exists in his transcendental form at all times. So even as he's all pervading everything, there's no front, there's no back, there's no this, he's still in his form. That's the whole thing, is that these three features are always there. But these are all features, are features of Bhagavan. But they always exist. But Bhagavan is the source. So he is a person, is the position. And these other things are also there. But for his pastimes, then we can see, we can interact. Does that make sense? You know, it's like a child. You know, the adult is very tall, the child's small. But when you want to talk to the child, you kneel down or something, or pick them up, or, you know, so then there's a, you know, comparativeness in the thing. So if that's the whole point, is because of that affection is done, so that through his internal potency, these things are done. But it's not that, that form is not eternal. It's eternal and everywhere at the same time. So that's the point where our brain kind of goes, fuck. You know, so we... Okay. Being absolute, beyond relativity, he is free from distinctions between cause and effect, although he is the cause and effect of everything. That unmanifested person, though they said he's in his form at all times, who is beyond the perception of the senses, but is able to be seen, had now appeared as a human child. Right? So the most supreme is appearing as basically the, you could say, the, you know, the least mystical of all human forms. You know? Like that, of all forms like that, because the humans, there's so many that are greater than the humans here. Then there's the demigods, then there's the, you know, the position as God. And so being beyond all that, then he comes just as an ordinary human child. Considering him her ordinary child, bound him to the wooden mortar with a rope. Footnote 28. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 13 to 14 to Bhagavad Akramrichi Mala chapter 5 titled The Essential Nature of the Energies of the Lord. Bhagavad Shakti Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. So all energies are from him. He's the source of anything. Right? Does that make sense? So there's him as the absolute truth. There's him as his energies, and there's him as rasa. These are the three features of explaining the Supreme Lord in the Dasamuha. Srila Prabhupada comments. In Bhagavad Gita 10.12, Krishna is described as the Supreme Brahman, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. The word Brahma means the greatest. Krishna is greater than the greatest, being unlimited and all-pervading. How can it be possible for the all-pervading to be measured or bound? Then again, Krishna is the time factor. Therefore, he's all-pervading not only in space, but also in time. So he's at every time, all the time. So therefore, there's no time. You know, what we say, oh, that happened in the past, but that's Krishna. And it's still there within him. So he's always present. For us, thing, we're controlled by time, therefore we can't access those. But that's why Mother Jashoda can think about the pastimes of Krishna that happened before, and while you're thinking about them, you're with Krishna now. So like that. So not only is he all time, he's all space. So that's why then the nuclear physicists can't understand time and space, because time and space is Krishna. And since they don't want to acknowledge that aspect, because it just brings up more questions than they can, you know, deal with. Yes.
Maharaj, in the spiritual world, there is no time and space, and all past, present, it's only present over there.
Yeah. But there's perception that they're there, but they're not there.
So similarly, so that is to say, the activities of the residents of the spiritual world are in the present, and they perceive things also, like you said. So similarly, because time is in the material world also, so...
No, but there's eternal time.
Oh.
What's here is just part of the potency of eternal time.
So
it's not that it's a different time.
So is it so that all the activities of the material universes are also eternal in one sense, that they are not lost in one sense? Can you say that?
What do you mean by not lost? And what do you mean by one sense?
That some activity happened yesterday.
So you want to know if that activity you did is eternal?
Yeah, something like that. If it is in time.
Even I can't live eternally by activity. I open that can of beans, it's eternal. Yes.
Because your time exists and time is just time.
Yeah, but what is that opening the can of beans made out of?
Matter.
Yeah. And so, is that matter? That matter, the whole earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and all these things, the 24 elements, are eternally there as pradhan. Manifestation is that can of beans. Now that's going to be a temporary manifestation. But the elements are eternal. The concept that you can have a can, and the concept that there are beans, and the concept you can make something out of beans, and the concept you can put the beans in the can, these are all eternal principles, part of the primary creation. So in that way, but the manifestation of them, that they come and go, is temporary. So your opening the can of beans is lost. But the principles on which you were able to open that can of beans, that's eternal. And we have to remember the conditioning that you call yourself, that's also part of the universal form. So it's part of Krishna, so it's always there, but that particular manifestation that you take part in, then that's gone. But the elements it's made out of, that's eternal. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like King Lear. But how many people play the part? Yeah. So therefore, you know, you in this universe at this time opening a can of beans, the same principle is there in the universal form, and it's always going, it's always happening. So it's not unique to you. It's a general thing. So not only can you do the, you know, do King Lear in the Globe Theater, you can also do it on Broadway. You can also do it at the West End. You can also, you know, do it in your bedroom. You know, like that. Yeah, so that's the whole.
Just to take further the example of the eternal principle.
Okay, we're leaving the beans of King Lear.
King Lear made it.
Kind of beans you want to keep, okay.
It means they have it in the spiritual world.
These are all part of his material pastimes. Yeah, no. Just like Arjuna. The manifestation of Arjuna as Arjuna, and that personality and that pastime is only within he performs those when the Lord comes and performs his activities in the Mahatattva. That's the only place it's manifest. Because otherwise, in the spiritual world, he'll be, you know, Vishaka, you know, like that. So. No, and the beings are only from him. Yeah. And that also includes pizza. But the point is because this is pastimes here, so he does take part in these pastimes here. right? The Lord is the Archamurti, he is, it is Krishna, and he's performing his pastimes here, so you offer him a pizza, then in his pastimes he's eating a pizza. It doesn't mean Mother Jashoda is going to whip up a pizza. Or since she doesn't have the oven for it, therefore she calls out for the pizza. Right?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I'd probably get cold. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the limit of our that's where the limit of our being limited by time and space comes to its limit. that we, you know, we overly speculate and come up with these kind of, you know, things that are unnecessary. Right? We don't have to take it that far, because what's the whole point? Because the point is what pleases Krishna, that's what's going on. So, you know, because if that was so important, we'd see it would be mentioned. You know, they don't mind. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami doesn't mind, you know, listing hundreds of preparations. You know, and Bhaktivinoda Thakura and what they, you know, just feed Krishna for breakfast. You know, Shukta Shakati Bhai. That itself is, if we could put that on for Janmashtami, we'd be quite proud. You know, so the whole thing, they don't require it. You know what I'm saying?
We have measurements of time.
Sorry?
We have measurements of time.
We have measurements of time. Oh, we have measurements of time. Okay. Okay. We have measurements of time, but although we are limited by past, present, future, for Krishna these do not exist. Every individual can be measured, but Krishna has already shown that although he is also an individual, the entire cosmic manifestation is within his mouth. Because it says cosmic manifestation, not universal manifestation. Because the other universal forms were within a universe. This is cosmic manifestation. This is the whole thing.
Yes.
All these points considered, Krishna cannot be measured. How then did Yashoda want to measure him and bind him? Because to bind, you have to measure. Right?
Yes. Okay.
We must conclude that this took place simply on the platform of pure transcendental love. It can't happen on the position that he's the Supreme Lord, otherwise it's impossible. They wouldn't try. This was the only cause. Advaita machuta manadi manantarupam adyam purana purusham navayoganam cha vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau govinda madi purusham tamahang vachami. Brahma Samhita 5.33. Everything is one because Krishna is the supreme cause of everything. Right, so we see is that as it goes, this point is brought out, but it's always brought back to that devotional point. He is everything, but despite that, it's the love of his devotees that conquers this person who is everything. Right, so this everything's a person, and this person is conquered by love. So here he's being conquered by that affection of Mother Yashoda. Krishna cannot be measured or calculated by Vedic knowledge. Vedeshu durlabham. He is available only to devotees. Adurlabham atma bhaktau. Devotees can handle him because they act on the basis of loving service. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. Bhagavad Gita 18.55. Thus Mother Yashoda wanted to bind him. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. When Mother Yashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by a distance of the width of two fingers. Thus she brought another rope to join it. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Though by love Yashoda could bind her child, and through the span of her lap was small, the small form of the boy was still all-powerful. That is shown in three verses. So you can say she can't bind him because of the devotion and all that she had there for her lap, which is so small. How can she hold the unlimited Supreme Lord? But he fits there nicely. So this is just another aspect where he's just bringing this out and, you know, showing the love that he has. Because otherwise you don't think of that. We just think, oh, the rope tying, yes, that's where you try to bind. But he's unlimited. His form pervades everywhere. So how can he sit on Mother Jashoda's lap? So it's only because of her love that that is able to happen. So same, but through this one pastime that across is brought out, that can therefore be appreciated in all other pastimes. Okay, this again, the more than time's up, so it's not a few sentences. Yes. We're bound by time, and Krishna's not. Before we come on Monday morning, he'll still be there. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.